Truth Radio Network, because you live by faith.
If you go to Google and put in the name Gavin DeBecker, G-A-V-I-N-D-E-B-E-C-K-E-R, you'll see that though you probably haven't heard of this man, he's very well known in a lot of circles for his being one of the chief authorities on violence and the reason to fear it. He's written a book, Fear Less. Interesting title. Magnificent book. I found a quantity of these, a small quantity, and I'd be glad to share one of these with you for a very little donation to Truth Radio. This book is a secular treatment of the concept of fear, what we should be afraid of, and how we should deal with it. P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444 is the address to use. Donate anything you choose when you ask for Fear Less, a book by Gavin DeBecker. A public hearing into the question of election fraud is about to be convened in the state of Ohio, and we are here as the crowd quiets to hear a computer programmer testify.
Mr. Curtis, would you please state your full name for the record?
My name is Clinton Eugene Curtis.
And where do you reside?
Tallahassee, Florida.
And what is your profession?
I'm a computer programmer.
Would you please speak into the microphone so the audience can hear your testimony?
I'm a computer programmer.
Mr. Curtis, are there programs that can be used to secretly fix elections?
Yes.
How do you know that to be the case?
Because in October of 2000, I wrote a prototype for President Congressman Tom Feeney at the company I worked for in Oviedo, Florida, that did just that.
And when you say did just that, it would rig an election?
It would flip the vote 51-49, to whoever you wanted it to go to and whichever race you wanted to win.
And would that program that you designed be something that elections officials, that might be on county boards of elections, could detect?
They'd never see it.
Mr., would you answer that question once again?
They would never see it.
So how would such a program, a secret program that fixes the election, how could it be detected?
You would have to view it either in the source code, or you'd have to have a receipt and then count the hard paper against the actual vote total. Other than that, you won't see it.
All right, Mr. Curtis, if you had been asked, you or others with your professional expertise, had been asked to design a protective program that would protect the Ohio elections from against such software to fix the election, could you have done so?
If we've been asked to make a program that could fix the election, sure, anybody can.
No, could you have designed a program or a procedure or a protocol that would have protected Ohio against this kind of rigging?
No, you have to look at the source code. You have to get probably programmers from both or all parties to look at the source code and determine if there's anything in there that shouldn't be there. I mean, it's a simple program. You're adding one to a person's total. It's 100 lines of code tops.
All right. Are you aware of whether there was any protective action in Ohio against this kind of vote rigging through software?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
You were not asked to assist in the development of any protective system. Is that correct?
No, I was not.
In Europe, have you reviewed at all the election results in Ohio?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Given the availability of such vote rigging software and the testimony that has been given under oath of substantial statistical anomalies and gross differences between exit polling data and the actual tabulated results, do you have an opinion whether or not the Ohio election, the presidential election, was hacked?
Yes, I would say it was. I mean, if you have exit polling data that is significantly off from the vote, then it's probably hacked.
And your testimony is under oath?
Yes, sir.
And the testimony you've given is true?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Many years ago, when Truth Radio was radio station KDNO in Delano, California, we reported on election fraud. The book Vote Scam had just come out, written by James Collier. I interviewed James Collier. Shortly after that interview, we lost him. He died. I don't know the circumstances of his death, but certainly he raised a controversial possibility and documented its probability, and that is that when you use computers to count votes, it is simple beyond words to flip the fields. What they do is, during the vote count, there's a technical problem that arises. The computers are shut down briefly, and when they come back up, those who are winning start to lose, and those who are losing start to win. It's just really very simple. You just flip the fields, as was described in this hearing. Now, if this sort of thing disgusts you, you should be disgusted. I hope you'll join the others who are loyal supporters of Truth Radio in expressing your disgust by spreading the word. Invite your friends to listen to Truth Radio with you and support us on a regular monthly basis. We need your support in every way. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the Free American Hour.
We're going to rise up with the sun in the morning. Each breath of day with a prayer. Because without the love and kindness of the Lord and our Savior, we sons of liberty can't get anywhere. We're going to do the work our Lord puts before us. There's a job the tree needs to get done. The job of waking up the nation to the new world order, which is trying to put us under their thumb.
Look at that theme music short so I can bring up my guest. And I'm very happy to have Michael Tazarian on my show. Did I pronounce that right, Michael?
Yeah, you got that very much right. You pronounced the T, and that's true, Tazarian. Well done. Nice to be with you, Clay.
Nice to have you. You know, I got one regret about the conspiracy conference.
Uh-huh.
I didn't get to spend more time with you.
Well, it's always hectic, you know, and it's great to be invited there, and it's good to see people that are like yourself who've been mentors of mine long before, you know, I ever got invited to places like that. But it's very hectic, and you have to spend little bits of time with a lot of different kinds of people. Some people you like, some people you don't, and it's networking and busyness. So a lot of us can't have the actual time, because there's also pressure there, and important to meet with the public as well. The whole idea of a conference like that is to, meet the public, and especially at the banquet and other things, it's a tremendous amount of pressure. So, it's been difficult for people like us to sit down and really get into depth, But, it's good. I wish there was more conferences sort of like that, and if they were better attended.
I would like to see that, too. I'd like to have conspiracy cons or something similar like that, towns all across America.
Yeah, and, I'm amazed it's not already happening. I think that it's something that really needs to be either franchised out in some way, with decent people. But there's the beauty of it again. The uniqueness about conspiracy cons is that the good people run it. It's not some franchised sort of cookie cutter rubbish. And therefore, in one way, the downside of that is, it's not so widespread. It's a small group of people doing it in one state, in one area, one time a year. It really is pretty desperate in the sense that it needs to be done a lot more. But then, what are the people who are true? Where are the people who would not, contaminated? Let's say, But yeah, we'll have to keep that prayer going. That it might start to be taken on the road, so to speak, and get more publicity. Not just in this country, but all over. But Canada now, David Icke was basically taken off the stage by the Canadian police, the USA?
Well, they've arrested, I believe it was Keith Strom. He took the place on the Aryan Nations of William Pierce. And they arrested him for something he said years ago. And are holding him without bail. And he's charged with making a statement that created hatred or could have caused violence against some minority group. It's,
probably the Earth from Dell with David Irving this year. You know, I need a reputable people. You need a people that are very reputable in their own way and have even a large following. They're not just people who happen to be stirring up trouble in their local neighborhood. We're talking about people here who have, you know, some certain books, who are historical characters, who can definitely prove every single thing that they're talking about. You know, that doesn't seem to carry any weight anymore.
It's what's happened to Irving and Ernst Zundel.
Yeah.
You know, they're thrown into jails in foreign countries, kidnapped from this country, taken to, in Zundel's case, taken to Canada, held in the bottom of a jail there, and then exported to Germany where they could be tried on the charge of denying the Holocaust.
Isn't it incredible that the crime is committed in broad daylight to remove these people's sovereignty, to abduct them, incarcerate them without any kind of, you know, proper, you know, regard of international or national law, and then they're saying that these guys are criminals because they have to speak or say something. It's absolutely, this is the kind of, and then they're wondering whether or not tomorrow we might have fascism. My God, don't you have it already today? I mean, the atrocities are taking place already. We have unconstitutional wars, declarations of war, so that Halliburton and Bush Dynasty Carlyle Group can destroy America's reputation throughout the world. You know, people are always saying, you know, tomorrow do you think there's going to be trouble? Tomorrow do you think there's going to be a great war? Or tomorrow do you think there's going to be a fascist state? I'm going, what on earth is this tomorrow bit? Isn't it already?
Yeah, my friend John Togman, along with myself and other people, formed the militias around the country. Of course, we were demonized for that. Oh, these are, you know, they weren't calling us terrorists then, but, you know, they're militia, you know, like it's a bad thing. I mean, this country was founded by the militia, and you know, we've been targeted for it. And John Togman, he's basically closed down mom and rolled it up and said, Clay, we've been trying to get these people, we've been trying to tell them what's happening. Everything we told them 10 years ago is happening right now.
That's right.
And tell with them. You know, they don't want to know. It's just until they roll us away into the concentration camps, which they're building right now,
right,
which they've had built, and then now we're going to pay, we paid Halliburton $385 million to build the concentration camps. They're not going to build anything. All they're going to do is go in and dust off the ones that have already been built by the U.S. Army under the civilian labor camp program.
Amazing. That's exactly right. And people need to, you know, it's like we were speaking off the radio before about the fact that people like ourselves and people who are authors and writers and media personalities within this alternative history conspiracy movement, we are basically doing the thinking for those who refuse to think. So we not only have to go through this elaborate and enormous and costly and difficult process in life of educating ourselves against the grain and finding out what goes on beneath the, you know, veil of national security, educate ourselves politically, educate ourselves historically, but then we find that because we have a conscience, you end up having to do the thinking for those brothers and sisters out there who still are, you know, prefer to roll over and go to sleep and they prefer to stay in the consensus trap.
And you know, I'm facing it right now in my my own town. I've been here for 10 years. I've been publishing The Free American for 10 years. Been in the bookstores in every bookstore across America and been one of the best sellers, you know, for the last 10 years. And I take it back out and I bring it back and I come back to New Mexico and I take it into the water store and the feed store and the local bar here and they won't let me bring it in and they throw it away.
That's right. This is exactly right. You know, it's a consensus trend. But as we were talking off the air before, maybe this is, you know, my experience from Northern Ireland, from coming out of Belfast, and that is that until, you know, it's a sad state of affairs of human nature. But people do not wake up. They do not put their antenna up, and they do not drop the utter trivia and nonsense father to care about what's happening externally, to your brothers and sisters, to the world, to also your country politically, nationally. Those things seem to be, you know, dead. I mean, they said that in the next couple of years, you know, half the population of the country is going to be under 25. So we don't even have individuals who have even the context, who have the wherewithal, who have the care. We're talking about 1980s born generation who grew up on 1980s Hollywood, you know, who haven't even a conception in their mind about the loss of something that they never had to earn. So we're dealing with a tremendous falling off there, because the generation who's coming up today, you know, we saw some young people at Conspiracy Con, that's fantastic, but on the whole, we're dealing with people who don't even know that there's a problem. They've grown up with this kind of tyranny. They're not even old enough to remember the hostage crisis, you know, with Ronald Reagan and the things that brought him to power. You know, we're dealing with a completely dumbed-down, soundbite generation. And this is what I think is another factor that the big boys are looking to, is that there's not going to be anybody left who has that true spirit of rebellion that has to be earned through struggle in this life.
In the news today, I always watch about half an hour of CNN before I start my show. We've got the president basically warning the news media and the New York Times, because they have revealed that the government is monitoring our bank accounts and trying to go after us, and now they have done something wrong by reporting this intrusion by the government into our personal business.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Well, I'm, you know, I can say it straight and clear, because, you know, I'm a visitor to your shores, and I can tell you that the media here is pernicious, in the sense that what they're showing racially, what they're showing ethnically, the messages that they're getting, the utter rabid desire to see the Scots-Irish and Anglo-Saxon culture here be completely eviscerated and emasculated. This is, you have the reality in the streets, which is one thing, but then you have this other microcosmic unreality about to become reality, that the same old moguls, the same old media conglomerates, and it's just absolutely scandalous to me that they can put forth so much hatred and violence towards, you know, the Anglo-Saxon mentality that built this country, and try to take that down, you know, like it's an old lion that needs to go, you know, and the relish with which they do this is atrocious to me.
In this issue of the Free American, I've got the statements made by the Hispanic leaders, you know, current leaders, academia, politicians. You know, it's time for you white folks to die.
Yeah, basically. That's what I'm saying. They do it with incredible relish. It's not that I'm saying that it shouldn't be, the television should not be diverse in order to show us what all culture is doing. But that's not what I'm talking about. You know, as you know, what I'm saying is that there's an overt, you know, they're licking their lips with the power and the prestige that they now have and that they now enjoy. And they're able to almost forecast, as you just have said, that this entity that they have hated, or that their funders and their elites have hated for so long, is now so weak, so backward, so underfunded, and so confused in many ways, that so befuddled by the media. I mean, we have, you know, kids growing up today who are, you know, white kids who have no conception in the wide world about anything to do with their own ethnic or racial or religious background. You know, and this is incomprehensible to me, because coming out of Britain, we do have that. We still very much have, even though there's a you know, campaign over there also. But still, in an Irish context, we still very much have a clear understanding of who we are and what we're doing. And it comes to this country, and it's almost non-existent. You know, the media has just basically ironed it out. You know, it's completely mowed it down like a, you know, a cornfield. And to me, it's incredible that people are not responsible. The media can act.
We got to take a little break here, about 60 seconds, and you can join us on the chat room if you like, folks, at freeamerican.com. You can join Nevis and Gringo and Teddy. We're talking with Michael Cesarian.
You know what a license plate is. Of course you do. These license plates of this special type have come to us courtesy of our marvelous Truth Radio listener
in Massachusetts. He runs an art shop there in Gardner, Massachusetts. Your gift of any size to truthradio.com will bring you one of these attractive license plates. Full size, got the holes in it already, so you can... I don't know whether your state requires license plates on the front of the car or not, but if you only have one license plate, you can put this on the front of your car. There are other people who will want to do something else. We won't discuss that. But whatever your desire, here's a license plate for you that will advertise truthradio.com. Order it today, P.O. Box 344, Napomo, California, zip code 93444. And thanks a million to Anthony for this wonderful service.
Do you know someone who seems like the perfect mom?
With Mullets Together, here's Dennis Rainey.
In your mind, you probably have a picture of how you think you should act as a wife and as a mother. And chances are, this image is so perfect that it's unattainable. You probably think the perfect mom is always loving, patient, understanding. She's well organized. Her house is always neat and well decorated. Her children obey the first time every time. She looks fresh and attractive at all times. Walks with God daily. Studies the Bible diligently. She even gives thanks when her husband is late for dinner. You know, having these goals can spur you to grow. But when these goals become expectations, you can become insecure. Are you defeated today because you can't live up to unreal expectations? Today, pray that God will enable you to balance contentment with a desire to grow and become like Jesus Christ.
Moments Together with Dennis Rainey is made possible by Regal Books, the Moments Together devotional series at Christian bookstores or regalbooks.com.
Michael Tazarian, and yeah, this is great. Michael has been telling me about his background, and his father was a Marxist, a Leninist, had a statue of Lenin in here. But the communist movement, if it was for the people, you know, they take over Russia. And basically, they took over Russia because the Tsar, along with the United States, refused to ratify the League of Nations.
Right, correct.
And the League of Nations was simply the first step, along with the United Nations as the second alternative here. That was following right along the lines of the protocols of the Elders of Zion. And the communist movement was not about the people. It was about the wealthy taking over and pretty much snowing the people and just saying, oh, we're doing this for you. This is for you.
Yep, in the name of the people.
In the name of the people.
And remember, the consequence of Russia being, well, first of all, how can anyone underestimate the consequence of the white Russians being slaughtered to the tune of almost 200 million? People would stagger if they knew that the actual death toll is now revealed to be historically, factually, about 200 million white Russians, and these are white Christian Russians, so-called white Russians, who are the Orthodox Christians there.
Yeah, you hear about that, you know, and to Americans, white Russians are a drink. You know, it is people just like the Russians, people were not our enemies.
Far from it. They sent ships and guns and money to American founding fathers in the War of Independence and were so impressed with the original American tenets that the Tsar had also already commissioned, and this is an absolute fact that is not well known, but the year that the Tsar was killed, he was about to pass a law in which all the peasants, and the word peasant over there does not mean, as it has been put forth in schools today, as to be something lowly. A peasant in the Russian context was actually a person who did a very important set of tasks over there. They were respected. And the Tsar that year was going to give them complete and utter freedom to have to own their land. It was the first time in the Russian history. He was going to give the peasantry ownership of their land, which cannot be underestimated. And the Bolsheviks were squirming about that because they knew if they did that, the Tsar was just about to make himself the most publicity-friendly and the most famous man on earth if he had done this. And it would have transformed not only his government, but all governments. But what they of the Russian royal family, as we well know, it's always conspiracy from within that brings things down. We don't have to have G. Edward Griffin come on and remind us of that. But it is for absolute sure that, you know, tyranny from within. And then the funding of the Bolsheviks. And the other thing I was going to say is that let us never forget that not only did the white Russians in Russia die, but by having the Tsar deposed, then the Russian army is pulled out of the First World War, and therefore there's no vanguard on the Eastern Front. Ergo, all the German troops could focus now. They had no one at their back. So now they could focus on the fields of Flanders and France to massacre more American soldiers who had come into the war on the Western Front. The death toll instantly rises of American and British troops because Russia is now politically Bolshevik and pulled out of the war. So people need to connect the dots and realize here that when Trotsky and Lenin and these people were sent from New York by Jacob Schiff and Paul Warburg and the Rothschilds and the people who are now controlling this country through the Federal Reserve and the other federal organizations, these people are responsible for sending these criminals over to Russia with $1 million waiting for them in the Bank of Sweden to go over there and depose and murder the Tsar, murder his family, and to write above their heads, "Here is how all kings will fall," you know, quote from the Bible, which referred to Balthazar, which we know, of course, was the old king of the Babylonians who also fell. Now, who would write from Scripture over the head of the dead Tsar a quote from the Jewish Bible? Who would do that? To say, here's how we deal with our enemies. And then the idea is that what America doesn't know when they're challenging so many of the elite wealthy socialists, quote unquote, what a joke, are funding and supporting and giving kudos to the Bolshevik Russia. What an atrocity of so many American bodies died in the war because Russia have been pulled out of, the Tsar's troops have been pulled out of the war. So when I see these Arm and Hammers, you see, and Alger Hisses, and these Frankfurters, and all these other individuals at the Roosevelt, time of Roosevelt, and still in power today, the famous Stalin left wing of this country, it makes my blood boil to think of the atrocities that have been done in the name. And the Tsar was a great supporter of America and the American experiment, and sent ships and advisors and all sorts of assets to this country because he knew about the Vatican and he knew about the British royal family and he knew who the enemies of the world were, enemies not just of America, but the enemies that have destroyed my country, Ireland, and who are now studying about destroying your country, America. And these individuals have not gone away anywhere. So our problem is not so much the enemy, it's waking up the people that are meant to be on our own side to say, don't you know you're being shot at? You know, historical knowledge, know that, you know, you're being shot at.
And that's, you know, after I saw what happened to the Branch Davidians at Waco.
Exactly.
I told my wife at the time that, I can't sit back and watch something like this happen again without trying to do something.
Exactly.
And the only thing I could, the only plan of action I could come up by myself was to go against the media that basically said, oh, this is okay. Well, they deserved it. Oh, they were going after a child molester. Oh, they needed to kill those 17 children to protect them from a child molester. And I started the Free American to counter that.
I'm glad that you did that because I had just arrived in the country one of my trips back with this horrendous catastrophe. And I was reading at the time, I remember, because the media, the official reports were so ghastly that I started reading Norm Davis and a couple of other conspiracy writers, you know, to get the truth and start putting the pieces together, just like I'm sure you were doing and watching that. And you know, then years later, I was probably now, I'm talking 2002, I don't remember when it was, but you, some of your audience may remember, that this Clinton is on Oprah Winfrey babbling about his idiotic, this is post-Monica Lewinsky, post-the trial and all of that. And here he is sitting on Oprah Winfrey with his idiotic biography in his hand, probably a ghostwriter had written it, getting a standing ovation from the mugs in this country who have 17 children who were killed bent backwards. Their spines were bent backwards like a fish you find on a beach that had sucked in poison, had broken their own backs in the convulsions of the death that this person, this so-called individual, this creature lower than life, had inflicted upon these innocent people. And here is this creature getting a standing ovation with people almost in tears. I'm thinking, am I seeing correctly here? Is this the United States of America. What on earth is going on here? That this person should be indicted for war crimes.
And Janet Reno never got touched. I mean, it's like Dick Cheney today can shoot a friend of his in the face and not even be investigated.
That's right.
This is we've got the situation in America right now, and where the president is threatening to come after the New York Times because he's revealed a spying program by the United States government on the American citizens. Well, the government of Belgium is investigating this right now, but we're not allowed to do anything. We are in worse shape right now than the people in Russia were under the Soviet Union.
I turned the television on the other day. Who do I see on Charlie Rose is, of course, what's his name? The Bill Bright has already exposed this guy who is, one of the Kissinger people. And it just slipped my mind. It's Armitage, Richard Armitage.
Richard Armitage, yeah.
I can't imagine a human being on this earth who's been more exposed for his criminal actions. I mean, granted, Bush could probably hide his criminal actions. As amazing as that is, he might still be able to get away with it. But Richard Armitage, I don't know anybody who could be more exposed by the alternative community as a dire criminal than him. And he's turning the box in there, he's on Charlie Rose. You know, it's like during the Baker administration when they were dealing with Saddam in the beginning, the Secretary of State said, hench person, this woman whose name I fortunately cannot remember, retired to 100 acres, and to an enormous pension. Yet she is the one who was in dialogue as an ambassador to Iraq, was giving Saddam Hussein the green light, saying, we have nothing to do with your sovereignty. You go and put your troops at the border of Kuwait. Why are you even bothering asking us? America doesn't involve itself in anybody's sovereignty. But Saddam Hussein had asked three or four times, is America okay with this if I go and police the border there with Kuwait? And the Secretary of State, second in command, who retired for all these millions, has never seen a day in court. This liar, whose name I can't quite remember right now, is the same thing you're saying. These individuals, they get kudos, they get pats on the back from their Masonic connections. We have to realize there's a Masonic coterie who has no love for America. They may operate in American context or American milieu, but these are creatures of the Black Pope. These are creatures of the royal dynasties of Europe. As Lyndon and LaRouche and Paul Bright and people like yourself, Clay, have exposed them. People need to get up on their ass, grow up, and wake up to find out that the greatest country on earth is about to sink into the sea like a blinking Titanic, and that you rushing around in the pigsty created for you by your hidden masters, meaning the political milieu, is no better than rearranging furniture on the Titanic. People need to get up and read the great papers of this country who wrote about this, like Father Coughlin and Charles Lindbergh Sr. and Gary Allen, the senator, and the nine yards of people who have already spoken up in the past.
Look at McCarthy. I mean, he just didn't—he didn't quite have a total grasp on him, but he was trying. He just didn't realize that the Communist Manifesto, the Communist Movement, the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto have been intact in America longer than in Russia.
For sure, longer. In fact, the henchmen, the Trotsky and Lenin, lived in the Bronx, in New York City, and worked for a communist newspaper there long before they ever saw Russia. They were funded and left America by way of Canada. And as a matter of historical fact, when they arrived at the border of Canada, the immigration of Canada knew who they were because they were known terrorists. They were known international fifth columnists, agent provocateurs, and known terrorists, so that the Canadian immigration during the time of the outbreak of First World War would not let them through for the very reason that I said earlier on, because the Canadian immigration, the Canadian government knew exactly where these guys were heading. They knew these people. They contacted Roosevelt at the time and said, these people are leaving the shores of America so that they can go and depose the Tsar. We are not letting them through. And what happened was, the historical fact that Lenin and Trotsky were held at the border in Canada and put in incarceration as international terrorists until the American government made it so hot to handle for the Canadians that they had to release them. They were told by the corporate power and the political power here that you release those men. The Canadian head of immigration said that I will resign and expose this if you do this, because we know who exactly these people are. And the American government. So it's no point, it's no good bringing the crime, to the like them. It's who's behind them. Who put the $1 million in the Bank of Sweden? I stood in the train station in Sweden, in Stockholm, where Lenin came in his private luxury train, where he could not be stopped. But he arrived for one day in Sweden so he could pick up the $1 million that had been put for him there by the Schiff organization and by the Warburgs and by the Rothschilds. So that he could cross, and there's even war correspondents to this who remember this. And they remember this train, the sealed train, going across Europe and entering into Russia. And that signed and sealed and delivered the Russian people and the white Russian people to this Leviathan that had been long in the making in the Western lands. Karl Marx wrote his manifesto in London, courtesy of the British Museum and the British Library. His funder for that was Frederick Engels, a man whose name appeared far longer on the Communist Manifesto. It took 25 years or something like that for Karl Marx's name even to appear on the Communist Manifesto. He was so unimportant. But the man whose name appeared on it was the funder of the writing, was Frederick Engels, an extremely wealthy, almost elite person within England who had mines up in the north of England and children, just like the ponies working down in the mines, young boys and young girls working till their death in the deep, dark mines of the earth, the so-called communists, the so-called lovers of mankind, were industrialists, cotton industrialists and coal industrialists, brutalizing people in their hideous factories and in their mines, fucking them tomorrow, the next minute, that they're portrayed as the great liberators of mankind. You're absolutely right. These manifestos are creations of the Jesuit movement, creations of Judaism, and creations of the hidden hand behind the royal dynasties who knew how to play the game of chess and how to make sure that there would be no freedom in an American context.
You know, I've made the statement here, and the conspiracy con, my talk was that this isn't the New World Order that we're facing here. That was a term created by George Bush. And the first story that I ever did on the political movements was George Bush's Operation Watchtower, which he used special forces to build radio towers to guide the planes in from Columbia to Albrook Air Force Base, which was then in the control of Bush's partner, Manuel Noriega.
That's right.
And Colonel Edward B. Cotolo, who was later killed by Mossad agent Michael Harari in England, made the statement, yeah, we unloaded, we built the watchtowers, and then we got it in 100 plane loads, and the cargo was cocaine. And then they flew the cocaine from Albrook Air Force Base to another secure base, secured by another Bush partner. The air base that they flew the cocaine to was Mena, Arkansas.
Yeah, it was run by, and look who was a big fan down there.
Bill Clinton was, I told William Tyree, who's doing life in Walpole Prison after they killed his wife and framed him for the murder because she was keeping a diary on Operation Watchtower and Operation George Orwell, where they were tapping the phones of all the priests and anybody else that might know about Operation Watchtower. I said, I sent Cotolo's document to Bill Clinton, care of George Stephanopoulos, and he started laughing at me. He said, Clay, he's not going to use that. He's not going to expose Bush. He works for George Bush.
Well, in the same boat. By the way, I want to compliment you on your talk at Conspiracy Con, as usual. It was brilliant. You know, and we have that small group who has the passion to listen to people like yourself. But it is a very, very difficult time. I tend to, because I've got these guests, stuff that's up in my country, repeatedly, I can only share with your audience and people who might feel as committed as you do, in a way that never forget that, sometimes it needs the hammer to come down for people to get with it. And there needs to be that feeling of spread.
Somewhere down deep in the resources of Truth Radio, a video has been hiding, and I just discovered it recently. It's entitled The Civil War Debate. This is a public meeting with hundreds of people attending. It was held, I believe, in Georgia. There is one man stating the case for the North and another man stating the case for the South and a moderator. It's anything but boring. If you've studied our history going back to the Civil War at all, there's information in this video that you will consider to be really vital, and it's a really terrific experience to listen to it. I hope you'll order a copy as you write to P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. Your gift of any size will bring you a copy of The Civil War Debate. Write to us soon. Thanks.
Historical science. Now what is it? Answers with Ken Ham, whose ministry is building a major creation museum near Cincinnati, Ohio. Well, Ken, that sounds a little strange. What do you mean by that term, historical science?
The reason many people are confused about creation and evolution and the supposed billions of years for the age of the Earth is because they don't understand the difference between what's called historical science and observational science. Let me explain to you. When NASA scientists sent a rover to Mars last year, this great technological achievement was a result of observational science. Scientists used their five senses with repeatable testing, and they built this great marvel of technology. But when these same scientists stated that the rocks that the rover's camera were photographing were millions of years old, they just stepped outside of observational science, and now they're using historical science. You see, they couldn't prove the millions of years. This was their belief about the past, and is based on lots of fallible assumptions. Creation scientists can show that there's nothing in observational science that contradicts the account of origins recorded in Genesis. The next time someone talks about molecules to man evolution or millions of years, remember, they're dealing with historical science or beliefs about the past, not things that can be observed, repeated, or proved.
Evolution is a false history of the universe, and the Bible presents the true record. Find out more when you read Ken Ham's free booklet, The Seven Seas of History. It's available, along with many other booklets, at AnswersRadio.com.
But then that shuts out my hundreds of subscribers that depend on the hard copy. It shuts off the bookstores that I could put the magazine back in.
Right. Exactly. A lot of people don't have computers.
And the people that only have computers, you know, they get some of the same information that I put out, but they don't get it in such a concise form.
Right.
To show, here's what's happening here, here's what's happening here, here's what's happening here. Look, when you put it all together, doesn't that paint a little picture for you? Doesn't that show you what's going on here? Doesn't it show you what your government is doing to you? Clay, you're anti-government. No, I'm not. I want the government that our founding fathers promised us and set up for us. Or as Benjamin Franklin said, when asked, what form of government have you wrought for us, Mr. Franklin? A constitutional republic, if you can keep it, ma'am.
If you can keep it. Exactly.
And what we've got now is the democracy. The democracy, which is, you know, I put it in very simple terms, like Benjamin Franklin did, another publisher. It's, well, democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner. Now, what do you do when you got 22 million... Hispanic voters demanding new rights when they have no rights because they're here illegally?
Isn't that incredible? Yep.
And, you know, I go to the Libertarian Party conference. We're working on a free state movement. We want you to move out of the Southwest and move into New Hampshire. Yeah, we're putting together a free state in New Hampshire, a Libertarian project. And the Libertarians want to open the borders to let all the illegals. Well, tell you what. Why don't we just put a sign on your door? I told them here. I was at the meeting over in Edgewood. Let's put a sign on your door. Open house. Illegals welcome. And let them all come in here and let them, you know, take a crap in your bathroom and let them raid your refrigerator and let them drive your cars around and see what you got left.
That's right. See what you got left.
And I try to tell you, you've got. You got the right idea. Yeah, victimless crimes, there shouldn't be any laws against victimless crimes. You shouldn't be able to, they shouldn't throw you in jail for growing a marijuana plant, hemp, which was once the main income in America until it became and we shipped it all over to Russia, and now we've got 10,000 products made out of hemp that we buy from communist China.
Isn't that incredible?
And, I talked to the doctor about that. Where are you for medical marijuana? You want to write me a prescription for it? I think they ought to just let the chemical companies manufacture it and let me, and let's just dispense it like that. Oh, I see. You want me to pay you to come here to write me a prescription so we can enrich the chemical companies that are manufacturing something I can grow in my backyard. Are you crazy?
That's right.
Yeah.
They are that crazy.
And, all they're doing is what Ayn Rand warned about. In case, the governments have no control over honest people, so they got to make us into criminals.
That's right.
And what happened in Ireland? I mean, the Irish and the Scots have always been resisting the Roman-spawned British Empire, hasn't they?
Yes, exactly. It's never been. The Scots are more educated than the Irish about the ones that they're fighting. But most of the Scots rebels will always tell you that it's the same thing as you have in this country. It's a foreign power. It's not an original English. So when people even say that they're fighting England, you see, that's too vague. Most Scots will know exactly who King William was. He was of the House of Hanover, of the Habsburg dynasty, going back to Rome. So they absolutely, they understand this army of occupation. The Windsor family, of course, Windsor's just a made-up name. They're originally Saxe-Coburg, or the Habsburg dynasty, Wettin. The original name, Wettin, or Guelph, is a major contingent from Venice. So we are under occupation in England and Ireland. Granted, I wish the Irish knew that more, but, anyone who's done a little bit of homework does know that these British, so-called British royal families are not even British more than a couple of generations. In fact, that's why this particular Prince Charles had to marry in with Lady Diana Spencer after, of course, they finally murdered her. But even the idea of a marriage to the Spencers is because the Spencers are more Anglo-Saxon than they are and actually predate the time of the Tudors, you see. So their blood is more healthy. The idea of marrying such a person was an attempt of these Germanic and Venetian powers to cement their power in England and have a better bloodline, you see, so that the powers that we have ruling in England are not English, they're not Celtic, they're not truly even Anglo-Saxon. You know, this is the whole problem right there. The true lineage of England has long since, died out. These imposter groups that are put before people as the true rulers of England. And in fact, they have more relatives in Belgium and in Holland and in Venice than anywhere relating to the Scots-Irish or to the original Celtic, Druidic spawned royal elites over that used to exist in the days gone by. But of course, those Druidic teachers and those bloodlines have been long slaughtered from the time of the Roman conquest. Just like you said, they were already taken care of by the time the Romans had come and gone.
Let's see. Just as sort of a simplification here, I say that the New World Order is the Old World Order. We've been fighting them for 2,000 years. The money changers that Jesus ran out of the temple are still with us. They just call the temple the Federal Reserve now.
Unquestionably.
And the Pharisees that Jesus railed against, the only thing I can see happen is that Caesar morphed into the Pope. The Pharisees simply became the Jesuits.
Yeah.
And, we're fighting the same battles.
And you're very right. That's exactly what did happen. Why don't people question why it is that the so-called Roman Catholicism that is branded from the Vatican came out of the Roman emperors? I mean, why from Italy? Why from Italy? What's Italy got to do with it? People got to realize what was happening in Italy before the rise of Christianity. Who was Theodosius? Who was these Emperor Constantine? And who were the people behind him? You know, my new book is coming out in the late summer called The Irish Origins of Civilization. Well, it's going to touch on these things about who exactly is behind the Vatican, going way, way back, to Babylon, like David Icke said, but also to Egypt, to show what kind of, what are the, you know, because many
And he was bringing people, and he was teaching them that God is within you. You don't need the scribes, you don't need the Pharisees, you don't need the priests, you don't need anything like that. Three of you get together, and you pray, and your church is there.
Absolutely true. And, you know, people who are familiar with the metaphysical aspects of my work know that I'm also referring to that constantly, and that is when people forget this, that they inherit a perdition. When they forget that the message of the Christ is that the kingdom of God is within you, that you are sovereign spiritually, then if you don't understand that, then you can hardly be sovereign socially, and you can never be sovereign politically.
I made the statement that every one of us, every human on earth, is born with a knowledge of good and evil.
Yeah.
And suddenly, every preacher in the world attacked me, calling Clay Douglas the Antichrist. And my answer to him, I'm not only not the Antichrist, you idiots, I'm the closest thing to Jesus you got today.
Sure,
I'm telling you the same thing he's telling you. Here's freedom. You know, I'm not telling you to go out and kill. You know, let Caesar have what's Caesar's,
mm-hmm.
which is nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Which is nothing, yeah. Everything they've got from falsity and from duplicity and from theft, these people have no rights to the world because just like any illegal virus or illegal immigrant, these are people who are illegally, they're like infestations. Because people's immunity is down. When you have a corpse, or when you have a rotten corpse, expect maggots. These are the maggots that have grown on the corpse of the body politic of the human race because they've lost their spiritual sovereignty. They cannot run around asking for political and the social sovereignty if people don't have spiritual, religious sovereignty within themselves because they've misinterpreted the teachings of the true masters. And that's why I am completely, even though I am also, you know, hate what I see going on in the world, the tyranny from above, and even though I studied the truth and I do know it, I also know an overarching meta theme, and that is that this stuff has to happen. These are also cycles of civilization. My God, the Egyptians came and went. The Romans, the Greeks, the Irish civilizations have come and gone. There is a cyclic action in life based on human consciousness. When human consciousness lets down its guard and stops being a guardian of the purity and the virtue and the spiritual truth of mankind, then history reflects that. So it may be as tragic as it is that people need to go through this sea change because they have neglected the garden of virtue to such an extent that they've let so many foreign elements, both spiritually and physically, enter in, and they become so decadent and they've fallen asleep. Therefore, history then will reflect that. And this culture is decay. We're in a situation of total decay. But that decay can never be brought upon you by external forces. You have to give it away. You've got to invite the vampire in over your own threshold. He cannot come in of his own free will. You've got to remove, you know, the talismans of protection from yourself before the vampire can suck your blood. You know, so these individuals are here by our duplicity because we've had teachers like Ed Eustace Mullins. Where was anybody listening to G. Edward Griffin and to, you know, Gary Allen and Father Coughlin and Charles Lindbergh Sr.? The list is endless, and Smedley Butler in more recent times. So we have no reason in the wide world to be having this pestilence, because the pestilence we're talking about, which is now in an American context, has already eviscerated Europe for hundreds and hundreds of years going back. All Europe knows about these powers. Europe has risen and fallen. The great martyrs and the teachers have already died their martyrs' death, awakening the world to all of this stuff that, you know, is now coming into the American context. So it's incomprehensible to me.
I had a friend that went over to Russia, took his motorcycle over there to ride around because he wanted to see where his family had came from.
Right.
And he said, I was having a wonderful time. I had a beautiful Russian lady that was with me, and we went to a beach and met some more people there, and we were barbecuing and having some wine and listening to music and having a wonderful time.
Yeah.
And she looked at me, and she asked me, is it like this in America? He said, I had to think about it. He said, if we'd been in America, we would have been busted. We would have had the police on us for barbecuing on the beach, for having a fire on the beach, for having alcohol on the beach. And he said, I had to look at her and say, no, it's not like this in America.
Not anymore. No, the basic freedoms have gone. There's an illusion here that the workforce was needed. Now the heavy labor, the heavy merchandise and the heavy labor has been already removed from this country long, long ago. And anything that's left, that's worth the salt, is now being outsourced. And, you know, people are going to need to see America turn into basically a third world country because I'm ultimately an optimist. I ultimately believe that the human race is going to, you know, wake up and deal with this tyranny. But I also know that things have to hit the, you know, it's like It's like the $6 million man. You know, it's going to have to go into the red before the people get into the bionic mode here to deal with this kind of pestilence.
Well, so, I get so frustrated, Michael. I mean, I'm going through that right now. Today is my birthday, 60 years old,
by the way.
And I am basically in a dead end here. I can't get the help. I can't get the support that I need. I do the radio, and the phone don't ring after the radio. I get the magazine out. I send it out. Thousands of people, and only get a fraction of the response that I need. And I can't find any help, and can't find any backing here to get together to try to change things, turn things around. And we're out of time. Michael Zarian, give out a website real quick. That's Michael Zarian. Okay.
After you become acquainted with Truth Radio, it becomes clear to you that part of what Truth Radio is all about is that we share with each other. And there's a man in Minnesota who has done just that repeatedly. And one of his gifts to Truth Radio is a DVD entitled Hijacking America. Now, this is something that, yes, it did originate on satellite TV, but I doubt very much if you saw it. This is something about the Bush administration and about the government under which we now live that you need to see and you need to share with your friends, and I'll be glad to send you a copy of this DVD. I'm all set with a brand new DVD burner that works great, and I'm anxious to use it, and I want to send you a copy of Hijacking America. Ask for it when you write Truth Radio, P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. That's P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. Listen to this bit of history. I heard him speak it.
I, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
Such passion, such words of meaning, and yet such futility. Franklin Delano Roosevelt knew very well from his law training that when he pledged to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States, that he was pledging to defend and protect a mishmash of changing concepts. Changed like wind blows sand. The Constitution needs to be upheld in its original meaning of its original words. Spread the word.